Hello, family, and good morning to you. Matthew 13, the parable of the weeds. What I'd like for us to get out of today, maybe you've gotten it today already, maybe all I'm doing is reminding you, I'd like us to find a glimpse of heaven today. The songs that we've sung already have helped. Maybe they've done it for you. I'd like us to find a glimpse of heaven today. For we must catch a glimpse of heaven now if we are to experience it for eternity. Matthew 13:24 that Riley just read for us, Jesus puts another parable before them saying, the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven has been a long time in coming to man. Now, God's always been in heaven, but the kingdom of heaven to man has been a long time. The prophet Nathan assures David back in 2 Samuel 7:16 that Messiah, the Messiah, will make a house, will make a kingdom for him that is sure forever before God. He reassures David and he says, your house, no, your kingdom will forever be sure before God. And then we get to the book of Matthew. Matthew reveals this son of David that will make the house, that will make the kingdom sure, the Messiah. Where did Jesus come from? I mean, he was in heaven and he saw it with his Father. And then he gave it up to come down here to be with us, to give us a glimpse of what the kingdom would be like. That song, Here We Are but Straying Pilgrims, talks about heaven cheering us on our journey. We're journeying toward heaven, right? I mean, is this our home? Is this your home? Or is your home somewhere else? Are you a stranger here? If you're a Christian, then you're a stranger in this world, and our homeland is there in heaven. If you're a Christian, then your walk is here, but our hearts are in heaven. And if we're going to finish the journey, we need a glimpse, especially when life gets crazy. Matthew 12, Matthew 13, Matthew 14 is a wild day for Jesus. Just stay in 13, but maybe turn your page if you have to. I have to turn my page to get back over to 12. But he's healing people on the Sabbath, which really stirred, I mean, think of stirring up religious controversy. He's done that. He's been accused of being a son of the devil, that he's blaspheming against God. You know, when's the last time that happened to you? That would be a crazy day. The Pharisees, the religious leaders, challenge him for a sign from heaven. He has this struggle between being with his the family that obeys God and then his earthly family that says, Jesus, you're kind of taking this to an extreme. You ever been tugged by those forces before? I mean, that's a crazy day. And then you go into the end of 13 and he tries to go home and they say, you know, you're really not the person we expected you to be, and he gets rejected. And then you go into 14, and John the Baptist dies. This is not, in human terms, a great day for Jesus. But he pauses amidst the chaos, and he gives us a glimpse of heaven. He starts to talk about the kingdom of heaven. I mean, think about that. Jesus is going through some difficult times, and he stops, and he gives a series of parables saying, you know, let's remind ourselves, let me remind me about what this is all really about. This is a new concept, you know, because this came first to the Jews, right? Matthew was written in Hebrew to the Jews first, and then, of course, we have it today. But it's a revolutionary concept, this kingdom of heaven idea that we read about in Matthew 13. Riley gave us the parable. And then this is one of those where we're blessed to have the explanation straight from Jesus. Verse 36, a kingdom amidst the weeds. Matthew 13, verse 36. Now then he left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples came to him saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the close of the age, and the reapers are the angels. And just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear." A kingdom amidst the weeds. Jesus has been revealing himself, and then he starts to talk in parables. He tells the parable, and those who are really interested, who are drawn closer, who say, you know, there's something to this guy, I want to learn more, they ask, "Tell us a little more." And those who hear the parable and give not a second thought to it, they leave. You're either drawn closer to ask more questions of Jesus, or the things he says turn you off and you're done listening. That's eventually where Jesus gets to. And it's a parable describing what? It's describing a kingdom of heaven. Did you see that in verse 24? He told them a parable. "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to seed sowed in a field," which means the kingdom of heaven is when? I mean, there's a part of it that's now. He tells them a parable about the kingdom of heaven that is now. And it's not everything. We're not going to learn everything about the kingdom of heaven or everything about heaven. It leaves you wanting more. What's the field? The field is the world where God has sowed, where the Son of Man has sowed the seed. The field is not the church. The church is part of the field, but sometimes this passage gets construed like within the church. That, oh, we've got weed and we've got seed and just sort of live and let live, right? The laissez-faire attitude of it'll all work out in the end. We don't have to discipline people. This is not talking about the church. We need shepherds and men and leaders to discipline. The world, though, is what Jesus is talking about now. There's going to be good and there's going to be evil in the world. Another way that the kingdom being in the world is revolutionary to the Jews here, think back on your Old Testament history. From the beginning, it's always been the nation of Israel against the world. You know, it was the nation of Israel against Pharaoh. And for a while, it was the nation and it was Pharaoh. And then God flipped that around, right? And the nation was on top and they defeated Pharaoh and Egypt. And you go throughout the history and it's the struggle of Israel against the world. And sometimes Israel wins and they fight and David leads them to victory. And then King David leads them to victory. And then sometimes they lose. And it's like we're either on top or we're on the bottom. But we're not dealing just with one nation anymore. We're dealing with a kingdom. And where is the kingdom? The kingdom is no longer on top of the world, ruling the world, telling the world how to do things. Neither is the kingdom defeated by the world, but the kingdom exists in and amongst the world. The kingdom of heaven exists today in and amongst the world, not of the world. We are not the world. But it's like plants in and amongst the weeds. And there's a difference, and there should be a difference. But for a time, they're all together. Don't you see this in Jesus? I mean, he's telling us the story, but he is walking amidst the weeds. In this passage here, step back and look at 12 through 14. And he's dealing with weeds and with frustrations and with things that are not of the heaven where God is. The goodness of God nourishes all of the plants. The goodness of God nourishes the sons of the kingdom. But who else does the goodness of God nourish? The sons of the devil as well. You know, that's the weird thing about this life, is that every good thing that we experience is from God. But his blessing rains down upon those who acknowledge that, as well as on those who don't acknowledge that. I mean, you know how frustrating that is when you give a gift to someone and they take it and then they're like, yeah, this is mine, and they don't even tell you thanks. You also know the satisfaction of when you give something to someone and they say, wow, I appreciate that. This is from you, and that was thoughtful, and that was amazing, and I thank you for that. It's a big difference, isn't it? And it's hard that we live in and amongst the weeds, that the kingdom of heaven for a time exists in and amongst the weeds. You know, Jesus' mom was in and amongst the weeds. I don't know exactly why things are the way they are. I don't claim to be able to answer why there is evil in the world. But I'll tell you what, back in Matthew 12, verse 50, Jesus' mom, if I didn't say that. Jesus' mother, Mary, is tugging him in the wrong direction. And aren't you glad that it's not all said and done? Because doesn't Mary figure things out later? That's the other significant part about this parable, is that it's hard to tell weeds from the good seed at an early point of, I don't know, germination or growth. I always remember one of our farmers in Texas came and taught the junior high class, and he's one of those guys who would always say, I'm not a very good class teacher. I don't know why you have me do this, but he would bring in these object lessons. He brought in these two pieces of grass from his field, and he's like, I want you to tell me which one is cotton, and I want you to tell me which one's a weed. And you couldn't. And he would say, that's the point. You got to wait until the cotton pops out. I say, man, I wish I was you sometimes. That sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? At this time, it's unclear exactly who will acknowledge God and who will merely take from God and not acknowledge who he is. And so we exist in the kingdom of heaven where we have glimpses of heaven, but we're not quite there yet, are we? We're strangers here. Our home is there. Our walk is here. Our hearts are in heaven. We see Jesus pursuing glimpses of heaven in his journey. We played this game in grade school on the old Apple IIgs computer. Anyone use that old thing? Yeah, there we go. We played the Oregon Trail. Did anyone else play that old? There we go. There are the hands. About the migration, right? From symbolically, or it was from Independence, but symbolically from the arch, the Great Arch in St. Louis, the gateway to the west, and you go through the Rockies, and then you get to the Dalles, right? You ever reach that point? You're like, oh, I'm so close. But you had to dump the wagon then and do the last treacherous run down the river because, whatever reason, you couldn't take the wagon all the way there. You know, early 1800s, 1830s, 1840s, trying to teach us about this amazing migration, this journey. You know what the key was, though, that game didn't teach us? The key, you know, I think about those, the migrants, the migration that went, I mean, they traveled, and they were journeying, and they were going to a place that they had never seen before. I mean, how do you take this vision of a place you've never seen before, and the daily job of going along the Oregon Trail, and how do you keep those held together? How do you keep in mind something you've never seen? How do you get a glimpse of something that motivates you? You know, the thing that the game didn't teach us was the real key to the Oregon Trail. It was Velcro. You didn't know that, right? NASA had to get it from somewhere. Just listen. I don't have a visual aid, but I have an audio aid this morning. Can you listen here? Hear that? What is it that makes that sound? Yeah, Velcro, but what on the Velcro? It's the hooks and the cloth, right? And you have something like Velcro because you don't want it to always be held together, right? But you do need it to be held together. And so you've got, the more hooks you have and the more cloth you have, the tighter it links together, right? If you have one little strand of hair and one little hook, it's not even going to make that cool sound, right? It's just going to fall apart. I think Jesus wants us to have as many glimpses of heaven in this heavenly kingdom as possible so that we keep on journeying. Okay, so it wasn't really Velcro, but it was something like Velcro. What held their picture of that land that they had never seen together with the daily job of journeying? Because, you know, there were parts of their journey that they wanted to continue. There were parts of their journey that they were glad to leave behind. I mean, really, a fire lit with buffalo chips? Not fun, I would assume. I've never lit buffalo chips on fire. But the people you traveled with, think about this, the people you traveled with would be the people you settled with, right? And so you kind of had to learn to get along on the journey because you were then going to be stuck with these people in Oregon for the rest of your life. You know, you had to circle the wagons, right? You had to circle the wagons and present safety. But once you got to Oregon, there was no Holiday Inn to check into, right? There was no prefabricated fort just to keep you safe. And so this sense of safety that would allow them to explore and develop, they fostered that to a greater extent. And so there were parts of the journey that they look forward to. And they say, you know, times are tough now, but when my family gets there, And when we have ultimate safety there, boy, it'll be worth it then. I'm not going to stop here in the middle of Wyoming, right? No one wants to get stuck in Wyoming. So what's heaven going to be like? What glimpses of heaven do I see Jesus seeing? I love that passage there in 13:43. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of the Father. Man, the righteous shining like the sun. And so what is hooking us, right? What is our glimpse of heaven that keeps us journeying, that holds our attention so that we continue to journey toward God? Well, let's go back to Matthew 12:46. Jesus saw a day, and this isn't an exhaustive list by any means. I've got a couple things that'll hook us and hopefully draw us closer and give us a glimpse of heaven. But I'm sure you have your own, and I would be interested to hear those. Jesus saw a day when there would be no more goodbyes. I mean, a lot of people, most of us don't like goodbyes. You know, maybe it's with family members. You know, maybe the small group that you're a part of, you come and you're together for that sweet hour, and then you gotta say goodbye, right? Our Christian fellowship, our time together, is sort of always tinged at the end by, but I got to go now. I have to leave now. Well, Jesus felt that, right? He had come from perfect fellowship with the Father that never ended, and he came down with people who were partially like-minded, but then he was also pulled away from that in moments. Matthew 12:46, while he was still speaking to the people, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside asking to speak to him. But he replied to the man who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and he said, here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. And so Jesus wanted to be with people who acknowledge the goodness of God. Did you see that? Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven. God was in heaven. Jesus was in the kingdom, but he wasn't there yet. And he had to say goodbye to those disciples. and go on about his other duties and his other things. But you know, there's going to be a day among those who do the Father's will when that word is going to lose its meaning. Goodbye is going to be meaningless when we're all one and we're with God. And so every time I say goodbye, I should think about, boy, that's a glimpse of heaven. I mean, there's sadness in saying goodbye, and we have to say goodbye, but that's a glimpse of heaven. And praise God that he puts that longing in our heart. I mean, you don't have to be a church person to acknowledge that saying goodbye is hard. This is an eternal longing inside of us for relationships that will not break down. Let's go to the end of chapter 13. Jesus looked forward to a great homecoming. The phrase, home sweet home, you get home from a long journey, and you get in your own bed, and you get to eat your own food, and you're with your own people. Home sweet home, right? There's just nothing like that. And then your pipe freezes. Or the cat gets sick. Or you find a problem with the car, or your kid gets sick. Yeah, home sweet home. I mean, we feel that, right? There's home, there's safety. There was a psychologist, she was Canadian-American, Mary Ainsworth, and she did those strange situations of attachment theory where she would bring a mom and a child into a room that was strange, and the mom would be there, and she would see what the kid would do, right? And a well-attached child would have a secure base. They knew mom loved them, but they also knew mom was going to give them the freedom to run around and explore things. And so there was a safe place that gave way to exploration and inquiry and seeing things, right? So we need safety, but it's not all just about being with mama, right? Being a mama's boy. It's also having a safe place and going out and exploring. Jesus had a home. But he came home, and it was like coming home, and home sweet home, but then your pipe is broken, and it's, nope, it's just, I'm not home yet, I'm still journeying. Matthew 12:53, Jesus had finished these parables, and he went on from there, and coming to his hometown, he taught in their synagogues so that they were astonished. Jesus is home, and he should be able to teach for a while and be at peace. And then the pipe breaks. Where did this man get his wisdom in these mighty works? Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? And are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas? And are not all his sisters with us? He had a big family. Where then did this man get all these things? And they took offense at him. But Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own household. At what point in your life as you grew up was home not quite home anymore? You remember that moment? Maybe it wasn't just a moment for you, but I remember that. You go off to college, and you're like, man, I'm just going to get through this semester. I'm going to go home, and it's home sweet home. And you come home, and I'm different, and home's different, and it's just not quite the same anymore. There's going to come a day where there will be an eternal homecoming, where home sweet home will really be a comfortable place. And I don't know, don't quote me on this, but I think it'll be a place where you're safe and you can continue to ask and inquire and explore and learn. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do in heaven, and the whole concept of doing something in heaven, I can't explain that. But there's such a longing in us today for safety in which to go and explore. And that's what Jesus came, and there was that tinge inside of him. He knew his home wasn't here, and so he gave us a glimpse. We have a weariness for home, and every time I'm weary for home, it creates a longing in me for God's comfort so that I can pursue the great things of God. So we have the going away of goodbyes. We have the great homecoming. And then we got to talk about food. Jesus talked often of home-cooked food. I guess they didn't have any place to go out and eat, so maybe it was all home-cooked food back then, right? But if you like food, I think you'll like Jesus. Read through chapter 13. He talks about grain and wheat. He talks about mustard seeds and yeast. He talks about fish. He talks about bread. We take the Lord's Supper, right, which is bread and which is juice, and it's this thing that is supposed to nourish us. But we're reminded that our bodies are need machines. You boil down the human body, and it's a constant need machine. You always got to be putting something in it. And so as Jesus fills the bellies of those who eat, he's going to have to do it again. Our spirit is willing. I know your spirit is willing, but isn't your flesh weak? It's getting weak right now, right? We've got about 15 minutes until we get to go eat. And we long for strong flesh that will keep up with our willing spirit. But it's not just about, you know, oh, there's going to be this great feast in heaven and I can eat whatever I want and I won't be hungry anymore. Because that's just the tip of the iceberg. What's heaven going to be like for our dear child, Michael Street? I don't know if you know Michael. I know. What's it going to be like for him when he can run if we run. I mean, he can jump if we jump. He can talk if we talk. Our bodies continually remind us of how weak we are. And yet the Apostle Paul talks about this recreated body in which we're not limited by those things anymore. And all of us experience that to some sense, lesser or more. But our bodies just fail us in so many ways. And yet there's going to be a time where it's not going to hold us back. It's beyond a physical satisfaction into a recreated body, perhaps like Paul talks about. You know, Jesus' body was wore out, and it was defeated, and it was put in the ground. And when we eat the bread and we drink the fruit of the vine, we remember that. We say, man, that guy got wore out by his enemies. But then you think, but that's not where it stayed. His body is recreated. His blood is flowing. How? I don't know. That's the mystery that draws us on. But he was the first fruits of what is available for us. You know, maybe there's a lot of things that draw you to heaven, and my point today is not to say that there's only one thing, right? Because Velcro really works when you've got lots of hooks and you've got lots of cloth, and it's holding that vision of heaven with your daily job of journeying, because there's a lot of this life I'm going to be excited to leave behind, but there's some of it, the God side of it, that's going to continue on. The kingdom of heaven will become the heaven in which we are with God. And so in our brightest shining moments, what holds our view of heaven? Well, one of the first fellas to take the Oregon Trail, before it was the Oregon Trail, right, was Meriwether Lewis, Lewis and Clark. August 18th, 1805, he was 31 years old. Imagine that. We got to go explore this new country, and we're going to send a detachment of soldiers with you, and you're going to run into dangers, and if you fail, this could really tank us as a nation. And so let's pick a 31-year-old to go and do that. And boy, he felt the pressure. And so he pauses on August 18th, and there's this journal entry where he's like, you know, I'm 30 years old. I'm probably halfway done with my life. That's a hard thought. And he says, I have all this pressure riding on me. What kept him going? I mean, maybe it was the reward. You know, I'm sure they would pay him well for that. Was it recognition? He was a soldier. Maybe it was his duty that kept him marching on. He certainly achieved fame. Maybe it was just routine, just doing what you're supposed to do. But in his brightest moment, he penned this, and he said, you know, in the future, this is halfway through his life, his journal entry. He says, in the future, he's not even halfway to the Pacific yet. In the future, I vow to live for mankind as I have heretofore lived for myself. I vow to live for mankind as I have heretofore lived for myself. Oh, man. I mean, we all know that stuff is cool, but stuff still leaves that God-sized hole in your heart. We all know the excellence of activities, right? But activities sometimes just leave us wore out. And those are all good and those are all well. But they don't earn us heaven. And they don't satisfy our deepest longing. And like Lewis stops and he says, you know, this country has given me some great opportunities here. I'm not just going to do this to satisfy myself. I'm going to do this to give back. God showers his blessings upon his people, upon the sons of the devil and upon the sons of the kingdom, right? And at what point do we pause and we say, God's given me a lot of stuff, but I'm going to radiate those things back to him. My relationships aren't just for me anymore. I'm going to radiate that back to God. The sense of security that I have in my life, the safety that I have, I'm not just going to keep that for myself, but I'm going to radiate that back to God. The satisfaction, the fulfillment physically that I can, you know, provide for myself here in order to get me to heaven, I'm not just going to do that for me. I'm going to radiate that back to the one who gave it to me. I mean, that's getting close to worship. We're almost talking about worship now. Now, what we do here as a church is extremely important. But you know, it doesn't stop here. The kingdom of heaven is not limited to those doors back there, is it? You walk out and, well, we'll come back to the kingdom next Sunday. No, in all of these things, we carry the kingdom of heaven with us. And so we can shine, maybe not like we will in heaven, but we can shine to some extent now and today. Because to catch a glimpse of heaven is to catch a glimpse of the God worth worshiping, of the God worth serving. And it is his gospel that enables us to worship. I mean, that's really the gist there of what I see Lewis saying is, it's not me who's put me in this position to do great things. I have been empowered to do that. And so we're not marching to heaven, earning our way along the way. The gospel has enabled us to worship by eternal and growing relationships, to worship in the safety of our homes from which we can seek and grow and know more about God. He's given us a willing spirit, and we'll strive with our flesh as much as possible to be pleasing to him. And so what's your Velcro? What is your thing that's drawing you on toward heaven? What do you read in the Messiah that keeps you pursuing those things that are of eternal consequence? The kingdom of heaven is fully realized. I mean, all that we have left to do is to save as many souls as we can before the Savior comes back. And we have an awesome Messiah that we get to worship. I mean, that's a Messiah worth worshiping that has provided this kingdom and that is a king of this kind of kingdom in which we get to reflect back to God those things that he has given to us. So let's journey together. Let's catch glimpses of heaven and let's keep on marching this week. I thank you for your attention and your time. I would ask that if there's any need that the church can help and provide you with, if you need to learn more about that gospel that enables you to be a part of that kingdom, then let us help you with that. Let's stand and let's sing together.